Zoe walked up behind her and said, "Cutting it close." "I laugh at danger," Andrea replied. Ms. O gave a polite smile and said, "I need you to go to Brooklyn, the warehouse in Red Hook. The head manager is raising a fit and saying his guys are too busy to come here for the meeting, and they want me to come by to see the mess they have on their hands. But I'm trying to avoid a subpoena, and I'm meeting with Dr. Srinivasan about the contents of Rabbi Diamond's crystal. Can you go back to Queens and get the good bagels from that place?" "Brooklyn Bagel?" Andrea said, rueful that she had brought in bagels one day early in her employment as a ploy to get on her co-workers' good sides. "Brooklyn Bagel is in Queens? That's stranger than whiskey on Sunday." "Yes, right by my apartment." "Great," said Miss O. "Go back to Queens, get the bagels, and then go to the warehouse in Red Hook." Andrea left and repeated the morning commute in reverse, this time watching each step. "You brought bagels? I got inventory pouring into this place faster than my guys can unload. I got no space to put all these boxes, and some of them glow. I don't need bagels. I need more space, more guys, more time, and more pinchers." The warehouse manager was a giant man-crab, but not just any giant man-crab. "I'm yelling at you, and you're smiling!" Andrea could not recall ever feeling starstruck in her life, but she could not help herself now as she said, "You're spectacular, Crab!" "All right, all right." Big as a minivan, his bright red torso and his six legs were all hermit crab. But his face was more oval, like a human's. His eyes were small black dots that extended slightly outside his face. He was noseless, and a bushy gray mustache sat atop a wide lipless mouth from which a gruff Brooklyn accent asked, "You're a local kid then, right?"
"Yes, spectacular crab."
"Everybody calls me Crabby now, capiche?"
"Yes, Crabby."
They were walking down the aisle of the warehouse, which did seem just about as full as it could get. The warehouse served as a distribution point for all of the superheroes around the country. Ammunition, armor, printer paper, ink, nuclear-grade uranium, staples, and other items flowed in and then quickly out. With so many of Cup's best headed for New York, they had to hold everything and wait.
"You live in Queens? Queens kids loved me."
"Yes, Crabby. You gave me a lollipop when I was little, at the parade after you saved the courthouse on Sutton Boulevard."
Oddly, she had completely forgotten about Spectacular Crab. Since adolescence, her heroes had more often been important historical figures. But back when she was very young, it had been Spectacular Crab.
"You remember that?" he asked. "That must have been 20-some years ago. And that was toward the end for me. There cream cheese on those bagels?"
She nodded, and he grabbed one with his right pincher.
"Not so bad. I got high standards, 'cause my mom's Jewish. So when I was born, she screamed, 'Oy, Gewalt! My boy's not kosher!' My dad was Italian and a Roman Catholic, so I was gonna be weird even without the whole crab thing."
They turned a corner and entered his office. As he slowly eased into his giant crab-friendly chair, he continued,
"Yeah, I was one of the first Cup employees. Place was a storefront on Orchard on the Lower East Side."
"I had your poster when I was little," Andrea admitted.
"Bless your sweet heart, young lady. I tell you, I had a lot of fans back then. Whole time I grew up, I was a freak. Mom had to fight to get me into school, and then I fought the whole time I was there. By the time I graduated high school, the government had privatized superheroes, and Cup put out an ad in The Voice, so I said, 'What the hell?' All of a sudden, I'm on the news, I'm on lunchboxes, and the women. Did you know I'm the only crab muter? Go ask Rabbi Diamond sometimes how the Almighty let that happen. All my life, it had been like I was the odd man out at the Noah's Ark key party. But when I got famous, whoa, then the women came out of the woodwork. We did some super weird stuff."
"Yeah."
"The city was so different then. It was dirty and real. Neighborhoods meant something. And us superheroes were kings. Me, bravest man, Harlem Hatter, bombshell blonde. We would defeat evil every day and snort mountains of cocaine every night. It was the best. Bravest man, he's still doing it somehow. The superheroing, not the drugs. But he moved down to Florida and goes by Grandpa Justice. Everybody loves the new flashy suits with their latex suits and robot arms. Garbage. You look at what we did, and you'll see that in our day, we were the best superheroes ever. None of this sparkling, clean corporate garbage. We defeated Disco Demon before he could destroy Studio 54. We saved the Museum of Modern Art from the Puzzlist. That's what the job used to be about then. Not like these modern soups with their biological enhancements and endorsement deals. We were great, and that's all we needed. But it had to end. By the time you saw me, I was paying three alimonies, my body ached, and I was doing side jobs for Chinese Triad. Really gruesome stuff. I had bookies that were going to cook me with garlic and butter if I didn't pay up all the money I didn't have. I was a wreck. But then I got help. Every day is a gift, young lady. What's your name again?
Andrea.
Every day is a gift, Andrea. And you know what? Things aren't so bad these days, I guess. Cup let me come back to work in the warehouse. I stuck around long enough to become the manager. Oh, and the internet's great. You know, there are all kind of weirdos, so I found a woman who is sexually attracted to crabs. I'm like, aren't people trying to avoid getting crabs?
Andrea gave a slight giggle.
You're all right, kid. You're all right.
She did not care if he was weird. He was spectacular crab, and he gave her a lollipop when she was six.
Tell you what I can do, Andrea. I can keep my guys in line. But we're going to need to put in for overtime. And if we get much more stuff, Ms. O's going to need to rent extra warehouse space until this thing, the egg thing, end-of-the-world battle thing.
Andrea nodded. She says she understands if there's more overtime. I'll talk to her about renting the extra space.
I know you will. Don't be a stranger. You come back here with those bagels anytime you want.
Thank you, Krabby. And with that, she exited Krabby's office and walked through the warehouse with a renewed lightness to her step. Perhaps this day of horrible commuting had not been so bad after all. She stepped outside and was immediately arrested.
Hey, what's the name of that lady you got in Houston? The one in that suit that makes her float, and she does karate or something?
Asked Officer Carbonara. Ninja Astronaut, Andrea answered.
See, now I always thought I could do that kind of thing. Be one of them adepts you got, like, maybe I could be a guy who is also a car that does the Brazilian kung fu thing. Capoeira? What do you think?
Officer Carbonara appeared to be in his early 40s, a crew cut beneath his police cap. He was trim, but not muscular. If you log into our website, there is an application process, Andrea informed him.
I could be Camaro Capoeira. Oh, cop car. I could be cop car. How's that sound?
It sounds very good. Andrea said, without evaluating the true value of the name. Perhaps it was good. Perhaps powerful crime lords would cower in fear of cop car. Andrea sat in a back office full of old records. Hazel and Chubb, the police officers who had arrested her for trespassing 9 hours earlier, had apologized and said they were sure she was not up to anything illegal, and they believed that she could clear everything up back at the station. Everything had not been cleared up. Rather than put her in lockup, they left her with Officer Carbonara. Better, she supposed, although she had not seen the holding cell.
I don't do capoeira yet,
Officer Carbonara explained,
but I've been watching the videos, and once I get the car suit on, it'll all come together.
There's always capoeira, Andrea suggested.
That's better than Camaro cop, but worse than cop car.
What about Officer Car Bonera?
That's just my name.
Andrea felt as though Officer Carbonero was going to challenge her to another game of checkers. She hated checkers. She had always imagined her first time in prison would be for something noble and grand, and that she would write something powerful and moving during her confinement. Instead, she just sat and lost at checkers to Cop O'Hara. Mercifully, Ms. O burst in before another game could start. With an angry mama bear burning behind her eyes, she said,
"Explain."
Officer Carbonara seemed unhappy at the prospect of losing his checkers buddy.
"May I ask who you are first?"
"Son, I'm about as apt to explain myself to you as the moose to the gnat. So you better start explaining before I forget my manners. I only hope you figured out who I am so I don't have to say another damn word."
Officer Carbonara left the room saying,
"I have paperwork."
Ms. O took his seat and inspected Andrea. "Did they injure you?"
"We can sue. We can also let this building be destroyed next time Statue of Misery attacks. It would cost us some money, but sometimes we have to send a message."
"I'm fine. They arrested me for trespassing." Andrea had not called Ms. O. In fact, she had not called anyone. She had decided to wait it out, rather than explain this to Professor Vernon Blanchard, the Big Axe, or her parents. Ms. O raised an eyebrow.
"It's a setup. You're the worm and I'm the catfish. They arrested you, dangled you on the surface of the water, and I just bit. I got a politician breathing down my neck trying to subpoena me for some waste of time interrogation, and they must have pulled some favors with the cops to arrest people at the warehouse until I had to come out."
"That means they're probably right outside then," Andrea noted. "We could sneak out the back."
"Nope. Chicken that runs only makes a tastier dinner. It's time to face the music."
Ms. O stood and looked expectantly at Andrea, who followed suit. They walked through the main office and out the front door with Ms. O calling out to Officer Carbonara,
"I'm taking her!"
and Carbonara mumbling that he had paperwork. They exited into the night, but in seconds they could see the illumination from a dozen camera lights. While Andrea could not make out any faces, she could see a blur directly in front of her saying,
"For too long, we have allowed these corporations to do as they please with no accountability to this city and this state. That ends now, and it will continue tomorrow in Albany."
The man turned to hand an envelope to Ms. O and began,
"Miss Persephone O, this states that you are required to appear before the New York State Senate to..."
After a brief pause, he could only ask,
"Administrative Assistant Vernon?"
"Funny running into you here, State Senator Vernon."
The Big Axe looked down his staircase at Andrea as she bounded toward him. Worried that he might be out or too deep in sleep to hear her ring, she felt renewed energy as soon as he buzzed her in. She looked at him now, wearing his sleep overalls. Someday she would ask him about the overalls.
"If you're looking for the space puppy, he's at Cup HQ."
The Big Axe delighted Andrea by referring to him as a puppy, finally.
"Which one of you has the axe?"
The Big Axe thought that over.
"Me, for now. Although it's hard to separate him from me. I'm thinking about naming him the Golden Axe. He seems to like me."
"Smart puppy.
I don't like the name because he doesn't actually have an axe, but that's a smart puppy." Andrea paused before letting out,
"I know things are weird and I don't want what you want right now, but I had a really long day. Train problems mostly. Also, I was arrested. Also, I think my brother was the one who had me arrested, and now I'm not sure I can go to family dinner anytime soon."
"Do you want to come in?"
The big axe asked. Yes, but I only want to be held. Also to have sex. I'd like to be held and have sex.
I agree to your terms, Andrea Vernon.
Chapter 16. Kayla, freelance superhero's assistant.
Now you'd think our government would be more concerned about the giant egg that might kill everyone in a few days, rather than questioning every penny that we spend in defending this beautiful city. But here we are, said Ms. O.
The New York State Senate's Committee on Superhero Relations, chaired by State Senator Vernon, had scheduled the day's hearing, Andrea was told, in order to discuss the current preparations underway by CUP in preparation for the upcoming confrontation so that the state government could be assured that humanity would be saved and money would not be wasted in the process. This hearing could not have come at a worse time, however, as the company's most important event loomed, and CUP needed its leader more than ever. Sitting in the lobby outside the main hall, Andrea handed Ms. O her morning coffee. I sent you the contracts for the supplemental warehouse space. They just need a digital signature. Also, the Bexar County Commission conference call was rescheduled to after lunch. Ms. O took a grateful sip. Remind me what that's about again, Andrea. They want a full-time superhero guarding the Alamo. Bless them for appreciating their history. The two heard footsteps moving toward them down the hall, looked up, and Ms. O's entire disposition changed.
Bad. Catastrophically bad, she stated. This is worse than the rodeo clown getting caught with the preacher's wife.
Ms. O and Andrea were looking right at Inspector Well actually and Kayla. They had only minutes until Ms. O was to testify.
Andrea, how did no one tell me they called him in? Don't answer that. Just fix it. I need it fixed, because if he testifies, he'll give away more secrets than a drunk accountant. Fix it!
With that, she walked away from Andrea and into the hearing room. Andrea felt a smidge of respect for her brother, who could discover their weak spot and know how to exploit it. All he would have to say was,
So, Inspector, well, actually, I know CUP doesn't do anything that its executive team would want to hide from the public.
And he would spew out every single bit of confidential information Ms. O worked so hard to protect. Andrea nonchalanted her way over to Kayla, courtesy hugged her hello, and said,
Oh, hey! So good to see you. I was worried you two broke up.
Well, actually... Inspector Well actually cut in. We did break up, but we're trying to make it work.
Love is strange, Kayla posited, and he was called to testify, so I came to support him.
That's really great, Andrea lied.
Pulling Kayla aside, she whispered, Hey, Ms. O is about to testify. It would be great if you could use the time we have to get him to correct you on some facts about the egg. See if there's any urgent updates he can think of.
Sure, sure, no doubt.
Kayla was petite, with bright red hair and multiple star tattoos on each arm. She had a genuine warm smile and a monstrous heel of a boyfriend. Yes, Inspector Well actually fought evil, but he did it in the most obnoxious manner possible. And that damn fedora! And that damn soul patch.
Oh, Andrea slapped her head as though she had just had a spontaneous thought. This hearing is really important. So if Inspector Well actually can think of anything useful, make sure you tell him it can wait, and it would be much better for Ms. O and everyone at CUP if he just waited.
Sure, sure, no doubt,
Kayla repeated. Make sure you say it exactly that way. State Senator Vernon sat in the very center of the panel, wearing his serious face. Joining him were 10 other serious faces distributed equally to his right and left. Behind them hung a mural featuring the Statue of Liberty, Times Square, a horse race, and a couple walking on the beach, all in front of an American flag. State Senator Vernon looked down from his raised throne at Andrea and Ms. O, seated at a long oval table. Ms. O looked gravely at Andrea. "We're going to need Craig to book hotel rooms for all the superheroes when they come into town. Something near the airport." Andrea gave a slight nod. "He says he's narrowed it down to two options and they're negotiating against each other." "Don't worry too much about this rooster parade," Ms. O cautioned, sweeping her hand around toward the state senators. "This is just part of every business. Client hires you for a big job, they're going to want to ask questions. Painter has to answer when the house will be done. Plumber gets asked about the pipes. I can handle myself just fine. It's the other one we need to worry about." "Had a good talk with Kayla," Andrea stated, with no affect. While she had not looked forward to an early morning trip to Albany, she had enjoyed being picked up by a luxury car. Ms. O had even had herself picked up first, which allowed Andrea time to sleep in a little bit longer at the Big Axe's apartment in East Harlem before getting a ride back in the Axe-mobile. It would have been so much easier if the Big Axe just moved to Queens, but that seemed like a lot to ask, considering she refused to commit to him in any way. That morning he had said,
"You know, the world could end in a matter of days. That means if we became boyfriend-girlfriend, it might only last for a few days."
She had responded, "Yeah, but you're really good at superheroing, so I don't want to bank on Armageddon." With a bang of the gavel, State Senator Vernon called the meeting to order.
"I would like to thank Ms. Persephone O for gracing the Committee on Superhero Relations with her presence."
Ms. O covered the microphone, leaned over, and whispered, "Are we stocked up on coffee? 'Cause there are some late nights coming." "Don't answer that question. Just email Fran and have her order more coffee."
After a deliberate throat clearing, Ms. O turned back to the committee and said,
"Sirs, I would say it was my pleasure, but my pleasure would be to return to my office to continue the good work of protecting the citizens of this wonderful adopted state of mine."
"Ms. O," State Senator Vernon began, "we understand that your contract is not with the state, but with Bronx County. Still, the money that the federal government gave to Bronx County will be taken out of the funding that we receive for other important state needs, such as roads and bridges. This committee is tasked with monitoring how companies like yours conduct business with our counties and whether you are shaking them down. No offense, obviously."
Ms. O gave a warm Georgia smile.
"Sir, the only thing I took offense at in your last statement was when you suggested there are companies like mine."
With little interest in a witty back and forth, State Senator Vernon asked,
"Did you go to space?"
"Yes, sir. We requested additional funds, which were approved. My administrative assistant and I took two of our best and brightest out to investigate the wormhole through which the egg..." "You're familiar with the egg, correct?"
State Senator Vernon was not amused.
"We are all very familiar with the egg."
"Good then," Ms. O remarked. "I was worried y'all hadn't heard the world was in peril, and that's why you had me in here."
Ignoring that answer, State Senator Vernon adjusted his tie and said,
"For the purposes of transparency, please let the record reflect that the administrative assistant in question is my sister, Andrea Vernon."
Andrea gave a casual wave and pushed her chair a bit back from Ms. O's microphone to avoid the instinctive call inside her to yell out,
"What's up, bruh?"
"Ms. O, did you destroy the wormhole?" State Senator Vernon asked.
"Sadly, no. We were able to get a recording of the other side of the wormhole."
"I will be happy to receive a copy of that video. Did you have an inmate released from Cromwell Penitentiary for extra-human criminals?"
"I requested his release for the purpose of saving the world. The governor found that compelling."
Ms. O, did your company, the Corporation for Ultra-Human Protection, donate to the governor's campaign? Further, have you contributed to the campaigns of many in-state and local government?
Ms. O pointed as she answered, "Yes, sir." State Senator Vernon had the look he got when he was about to win at video games.
"Why is that?"
"'Cause y'all keep calling and asking. My father was a harder man than me, State Senator Vernon. He used to never feed our dog Curtis when he begged at the table. But I ain't that tough. I get calls all the time begging for help with all y'all's re-election campaigns, and it just breaks my heart to say no to such fine politicians."
Displeased, State Senator Vernon leaned forward and attempted to stare down Ms. O.
"Who owns your company? And who sits on its board?"
For a while, it seemed as if Ms. O might not answer. She took her time in crafting a precise response, and then said, "Pass." Andrea recognized the face State Senator Vernon took on at this answer. When she decided to paint his room with her crayons, he made that face. When she liberated his pet turtle, he made that face. At any moment, he might have Ms. O arrested or go running to his parents and demand they ground her. Both seemed on the table.
"This is the legislature of the great state of New York. You cannot respond so flippantly to questions in this honored hall," he boomed.
"I still pass."
Flummoxed as she had never seen him flummoxed before, State Senator Vernon's face tightened up as though it was being pulled into a black hole. Andrea worried that steam might actually shoot out of his eyeballs. Luckily, Inspector Well actually burst through the doors with Kayla trailing close behind. After failing to speak because he was too winded, Inspector Well actually tapped in Kayla, who announced,
"The egg's going to open in 46 hours, and the Sparnaxian's ships are going to show up at the same time."
Sitting alone in the hallway, Andrea drifted through random thoughts, imagining what Kayla's parents thought of Inspector Well actually. Thanksgiving dinners had to be awful, she figured.
"Dear, this turkey is cooked perfectly."
"Well, actually, perfection is unattainable, and the turkey should have been left in for 5 minutes and 32 seconds longer."
Andrea stood up and looked around to see if Ms. O was headed back. When the hearing was immediately postponed, Ms. O had only turned to Andrea and said,
"Well, that was a fortunate thing."
She then ran off to contact her bosses, the mysterious entities she had passed on describing, leaving Andrea alone in the lobby. Not seeing her boss, she took a moment to consider whether she should attack the morning's crossword or sketch out the next chapter of The Courtship of Chancellor Metternich. Unfortunately, State Senator Vernon arrived to ruin her moment of solitude.
"Sak passe?"
she asked in Haitian Creole, which she had hoped would calm him for at least a brief moment.
"Nap boule, Administrative Assistant Vernon. Hey, that was a neat trick you played in there," puffed State Senator Vernon. "Don't worry, though. As soon as this plays out, we'll get Inspector Will actually back here, and we will get every bit of truth out of him."
"I'm sorry," said Andrea. "You must have me confused for a family member you didn't recently have unjustly arrested. When you find that person, feel free to use all of this righteous indignation toward them."
Trying to keep his cool, State Senator Vernon pulled at his tie and said,
"First, I just asked the local precinct to keep an eye out for anyone who didn't look like a warehouse employee at your facility, which seems fair, considering you have been bringing massive amounts of ammunition and nuclear materials into this city."
"We have a waiver.
And don't pretend you weren't abusing your office to force Miss O to appear at your ridiculous inquisition."
A condescending smile sprouted on State Senator Vernon's lips.
"Ms. O, is that what you're concerned about? I'm worried about the future of this country. Superhero Corps are the single biggest danger to America."
"When you first ran for State Senate, you said it was childhood obesity," Andrea reminded him.
Is this funny to you?
He had lost all patience.
I'm happy that you have a job. I'm happy that you have finally decided to be near family after years of complete indifference. But you have chosen money over doing what is right. When we were kids, Mom and Dad worked two jobs each. Do you remember how Dad would sell newspapers by the on-ramp to the Grand Central Parkway every morning? Every morning, rain, shine, snow, sleet. He did that so that we could get a good education and make a difference in this world. One of your siblings is educating young minds. Another is saving lives. The other one is trying to save a country. You are cashing paychecks and don't seem to care about the consequences.
She wanted to take a deep breath, but if she did, she would break down crying. With a calm, soft voice, she said, I'm going back to work now. I'm going to assist my boss in saving the Bronx, the country, and the whole world. In 2 days, if we all survive, I will have done my part. You will have held a meeting that wasted everyone's time and thrown a temper tantrum that made your sister never want to talk to you again. She turned and walked away. Chapter 17. Hector, Ex-Boyfriend. Andrea's parents, Dr. Vernon and Professor Vernon Blanchard, had left a total of 15 voicemails. She did not need to listen to them, nor would she in the car with Ms. O. State Senator Vernon had reached out to his base to gather votes within the family against his sister. No doubt he had told them that she had gone astray, that she was making a horrible mistake and they needed to get her to see the error of her ways. She thought back to her childhood and all the times that she would play with her older siblings. State Senator Vernon would pretend to be Toussaint Louverture, leader of the Haitian Revolution. Professor Vernon Blanchard and Dr. Vernon would be his army. And Andrea always had to play the French. She hated playing the French. They always called her the meanest names, but she was the youngest, and such was her lot. Ms. O read over the newspaper and paid little mind to Andrea, who again felt her phone buzz. Before she could hit decline, she saw that it was not a member of her family calling, but an unrecognized number. She clicked to answer, mostly out of spite to show her family that she would answer even wrong numbers before she would take any of their calls. Obviously, they would not know of this subtle slight, but it was a slight, and it felt good. Andrea Vernon, she said.
Did you delete my number?
She knew that voice. I did not, Hector. I just didn't bring it into my new phone. That was 3 phones ago.
Dinner tonight?
The fight started over the phone, and that had not worked, so she had told him to come over. Now the big axe contorted his massive frame to fit through her doorway.
It's your life,
the big axe continued from their phone conversation as he pulled his axe-wielding arm in.
You can do whatever you want.
Thank you for recognizing that, Andrea said, because I have had my fill of people telling me what to do today. He could not sit anywhere but the floor, so he stood, leaning against her wall.
Even if things were more commitment-y.
I appreciate you using my word, she interrupted.
Even then, I would not have any right to tell you not to go out to dinner with your ex. But it would be nice to just know that nothing was going to happen.
I told you I'm not going to do that for you, Andrea reiterated. This did not please the big axe.
Why not? Why can't you just say nothing is going to happen this one night?
Because then this would be a relationship. This would be a commitment.
Just for one night, the big axe pleaded.
I like this because it's fun, the big axe, and right now, this is not fun. He rubbed his massive hands over his massive face.
Fun? You know, I like you. I'm tired of wondering how you feel about me. Wondering whether you're seeing other people.
She had not seen anyone since the big axe happened, but that was not the point. Go out and hook up with someone else then, the big axe.
Tell me that wouldn't bother you, he insisted.
I have no idea. Go make me find out. She felt herself being hurtful. She really did not know how she would react if he took her up on her offer, and she was not sure she wanted to find out. But this conversation was not going to be positive.
You're a big, famous superhero. I'm sure you can go out and find someone.
I don't want to. I am the big axe. I swing down my mighty arm and chop down evil. I do it for the good of the world, not to pick up women. I like you. If you don't like me, then just walk away from this.
Of course I like you. When she said it, a smile appeared on the big axe's face and then disappeared in nanoseconds. You knew I liked you.
You never said it before, he noted.
We've been hooking up for weeks. Of course I like you.
I had wondered. Just tell me nothing will happen tonight, and we can table this whole conversation. We don't need to worry about commitment or anything for one more night.
I can't do that, she insisted.
And I can't go home and sit around wondering what you're doing. If you want to be free, be free. But I can't keep doing this. I can't keep making myself crazy.
I need you to just be cool for now.
Until when?
He asked, his body headed to the door. I don't know. He opened the door and started the challenging and involved process of exiting.
I'm not doing this anymore.
I don't want you to go, she said. But he went.
I'm doing FXPB now,
Hector informed her. Special effects peanut butter sounds like an exciting field, Andrea replied.
No, no. Foreign exchange, prime brokerage, he corrected.
I prefer special effects peanut butter. In college, Hector grew out his long, dark, curly hair, did performance art, and stopped people in the middle of their conversations to tell them how inconsequential their problems were in a cosmic sense. Now his hair was short, and he sold special effects peanut butter.
You understand how stocks are sold at an exchange, he asked. You can buy and sell stocks on the market.
Yes. Like peanut butter is also bought at the market. If he had been paying attention to her, he probably would have been annoyed at this point. Andrea grabbed another piece of sushi with her chopsticks, wondering why sushi was not considered finger food. You could just pick it up with your hand, dip it in soy sauce, and eat it. It made no sense. Despite the impending doom looming 36 hours ahead, the city had not ground to a halt, and the sushi restaurant was full of stubborn New Yorkers who would never abandon their city. Tourists who were not getting a refund on their plane tickets anyway, and supervillain junkies who traveled the world to watch the most exciting and destructive battles and yelled out things like, "Well, I think this is it," and "We're all gonna die." But I thought that in Charleston in 96, and we made it out okay. Yeah, I was there. Not bragging, but I was there. Andrea hated supervillain junkies, but still would have given up a pinky toe to sit with them instead of continuing with this ill-considered dinner. She overheard one of them say, "Did you see the video of those spaceships? The big spiders?" And nodded to herself, remembering that Ms. O had said the video would get out as soon as she handed it over, because the government was a canoe built by termites.
"Well, there is no exchange for currency. You need a middleman. Well, you don't need a middleman if you're a large enough institution. If you were, say, an asset manager, you wouldn't need a middleman. The majority of my clients are hedge funds. A hedge fund generally does not have as much infrastructure, is more concerned with being price sensitive, and has more counterparty risk."
"Peanut butter," she said. She strained at this point to eavesdrop on a supervillain aficionado who started a sentence with, "Yeah, we're all dead. Look at the size and the advanced tech of those ships. Even one would..." But Hector's stentorian voice blocked the rest out.
As a junior, Hector burst into a freshman mixer and sprayed everyone with food coloring. He told them he was trying to break their functional fixedness. She could not recall exactly how she felt about him back then. Yes, she dated him for over a year, but she could not say she liked him. She discounted that thought, feeling she was viewing it with wiser eyes now. Back then, she thought he was deep and thought-provoking. Also, her siblings hated him, which had been a bonus.
"I'm a central point of my contract for post-trade queries and also in making clients operationally more efficient. I know that must sound like bragging, but that's just the life of FXPB."
When their friend Natalie announced she was going to law school, Hector had said she was abandoning the quest for meaning and enlightenment and choosing not to be a person, but a cog in a machine. Also, he played upright bass. She really liked to watch him play upright bass. Hector leaned in and examined the remaining sushi as though it was a post-trade query that he could make more efficient. When everything checked out, he picked up a piece from the dragon roll and held it to his mouth. Without soy sauce, he took a delicate nibble. She questioned which of the two of them was in the wrong, him for his hamster bites or her for popping them whole into her mouth.
"So, tell me about your job," Hector called out.
She had hoped, now a half hour in, that she might avoid this part of the conversation. So far, he had only talked about himself, his job, and his inconsistent golf achievements. "I work as an administrative assistant for a plastic utensil company," she answered reflexively. When she first heard his voice earlier that day, she felt a rush back to college, to days when she felt full of hope and potential. With all the stress, it seemed like fun to time travel back to when she felt special and brilliant, even if she had been just as full of herself as Hector had been. Maybe she could feel that way again for a few hours. Maybe she wanted to pick a fight with the big axe to see how he felt. Maybe she was happy that he was angry because she knew how much he cared about her. Maybe that was horrible.
"Listen, I saw you on TV. I know you work for the company that rents out the superheroes for fighting and such."
"Yes, thank you." She had never considered that she would end up on television, and she still had no idea if her job was classified.
"That's why I called. You know, we haven't seen each other since college."
He had cheated on her. No, not precisely. He had declared her perception of a relationship to be antiquated and that he would not be encumbered by her draconian standards of monogamy. He had said this when she caught him. She strained to remember if she broke up with him right away or if she stayed to show how anti-establishment she could be.
"We have not, Hector. We have not seen each other."
"And then you called, for reasons that have not yet been explained." She stopped to allow him to explain. A best-case scenario was that he had seen her on TV and thought, "Damn, Andrea still looks good." A worst-case scenario was that he saw her on TV and thought, "She looks like a hedge fund concerned with counterparty risk."
"Well, I saw you on TV," he continued, "and then your brother called me and told me how worried he is about you. Do you have any idea what a danger these companies are?" "I didn't, but then he explained it to me and asked if I could try to talk some sense into you." His words.
No, this was the worst case. It took all of her strength not to flip the table over. It was basically the scene in Carrie where they pour the blood on her head, except instead of laughing, everyone was saying, "Do you know how dangerous it is to be prom queen? We're worried about you." Andrea stood up, shoved her chair into the table, and said, "Your performance art sucked."
"I disagree. I think it was just ahead of its time. Actually, I've been taking improv classes lately, and..."
He stopped talking as she walked away. Stepping out into the night, she felt more alone than she had in her entire life. Chapter 18. Doppler Destruction. Supervillain.
You did not hear this from me, but King Tiger's hair hasn't been naturally orange for years.
Señora Fuego sipped from her coffee and gave Andrea a moment for shock. Cosmina stirred her tea.
It is true. He dyes it.
After giving her the cold, mechanized shoulder since Andrea had worn kitchen sink, Cosmina surprised Andrea when she asked her to join her, Señora Fuego, and Permafrost at lunch. Andrea sensed an ambush at any moment, but her companions had taken the tack of luring her into a false sense of security with tasty, tasty gossip. She had avoided this lunch for as long as possible, but Señora Fuego and Cosmina both accidentally bumped into her and Ms. O. When the women asked Ms. O if they could borrow Andrea for just one lunch, their boss allowed it and Andrea had no escape. At least they only wanted to meet in the Cup Cafeteria, officially known as the Cupfeteria, so she didn't have to go through the struggle of leaving the building for lunch.
You know Esther? She works in IT? Cosmina asked.
Yeah, she just had the baby, Andrea recalled.
Well, you never heard this from me, but I had heard that when the baby sneezes, and I can only report what I was told, but I was told that when he sneezes, he turns into lightning.
Señora Fuego cut in with,
And since you can't ask questions, I'll just tell you right now. Her husband is a manager at a rental car company, not a superhero. Lightning Wong, he strikes when you least expect.
Everyone snickered at this except for Permafrost, who laughed a deep, powerful,
ha 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 ha, I love gossip. Thank you for invite. No gossip in prison. Only talk of who stab who has possessed Warden's brain.
What about you, Andrea? Asked Cosmina directly. You work with Ms. O all day. You must have good information to share.
Andrea strained, searching her brain for something she could share. She had nothing interesting on Ms. O, and if she had, they would need to torture it out of her. Before she could stutter something out, Cosmina placed her hand on top of Andrea's and said,
And so sorry about before. My suit is like a part of me. Imagine someone put on your skin, and then they gave you back your skin, and they say, Here is your skin. I wore it. That is how I felt about you wearing my suit. Do you understand?
Yes, said Andrea, terrified now that Cosmina might be thinking about wearing her skin. I'm sorry. It was a desperate situation, and I feel terrible about it. She did not feel terrible.
I forgive you,
Cosmina stated with a heavy tone.
And luckily R&D had a backup suit. I can never wear the old suit again. It is not me anymore. You were in my skin, and that sickens me. I mean no offense by that. Kitchen sink will fight.
We girls have to stick together,
Señora Fuego insisted. This made Andrea even more nervous than the possibility of a silver medal-winning Romanian gymnast wearing her skin as a suit. In her experience, any time someone said something to the tune of, girls having to stick together, something bad always followed.
Also, Permafrost, Señora Fuego added, us girls and Permafrost, who heard there was going to be gossip and tagged along.
I love gossip. Permafrost repeated.
Definitely, said Andrea.
Definitely.
Señora Fuego leaned in and whispered,
You want the big axe of doing it, right? Tell us!
Cosmina did not whisper, but bark.
You wore my skin, and I deserve to know the good gossip.
I saw the look you gave him at the stadium. You can tell us,
Señora Fuego insisted.
Gossip!
Permafrost said with a clap. Andrea could only reply, Pass. For a few moments, Andrea attempted to stay completely still, hoping that maybe if she did not move, they might not even see her, like facing a T-Rex. This did not work, however, and the two women just stared expectantly, knowing that she would crack. They had faced down the toughest monsters this world had ever created, and they showed complete confidence that they would crack Andrea. Also, she was not ashamed of the big axe. Yes, he wore overalls every day and watched television shows about fishing. But he was fun. He was an above-average dancer, which was impressive for a giant. And he hated the same movie she hated. They could hate-watch them together, and that was really all she wanted. Not in an indefinite commitment-y sort of way, but it was really good. Of course, she might have ruined it. She wanted to tell him that nothing happened with Hector, but then she would be admitting that he had a right to know.
"Come on, girl," said Señora Fuego.
"It is only us girlfriends," added Cosmina, "and Permafrost."
She hoped if she stalled for just a bit longer, Ms. O would arrive and demand that she fill out important paperwork. Or maybe she was fired. Anything to get out of this.
"Yes," Andrea confided. "We do it. Well, we were doing it. I don't know. We might have stopped doing it."
Then the alarms went off. Literal alarms. The Cup War Room looked to Andrea like a television studio control room. On the far wall, 14 high-definition monitors, 4 60-inch screens on the top, 6 40-inch models in the middle, and another 4 60-inchers on the bottom. The room was divided into 2 rows of desks, with 4 traffic distribution associates lined up directly in front of the monitors, and a raised back row for supervisors and guests. The screens displayed views from the different soups as well as the company's video drones. Cup's superheroes wore lightweight cameras and microphones while in the field. This obviously helped with coordination, but also provided material for marketing and fodder for blooper reels Andrea was told were shown at the company holiday party each year. Rabbi Diamond and King Tiger had activated their cameras, but they were both standing around idly at the foot of the Verrazano Bridge. None of the other soups had arrived yet, including Señora Fuego and Cosmina, who had taken off immediately with the sound of the alarm, leaving Andrea alone to realize she would have gotten away with pass if she had just waited a few more seconds. Add that to the official list of poor decisions made by Andrea recently, she thought.
It's Doppler destruction. He used his weather machine to rob a bank in East Brunswick, New Jersey, Teresa DeMarco explained. Middlesex County is Superbia territory, as you well know, and they sent out Golden Jacket. You know, the guy who's kinda also a bee.
I'm familiar, Ms. O said. We got less than 24 hours until that egg opens, and we have to deal with this? It's like a wasp nest in the delivery room.
A camera from a drone showed a live feed of Golden Jacket flying above what looked like a massive concrete truck with antennae poking every which way and a collection of satellite dishes of varying sizes scattered along the top. A Tesla coil extended from the top of the cab of the truck, shooting blue sparks into the sky. They could see a cloud hovering just above the truck, shooting cassava-sized hail at Golden Jacket. As the B-man dodged, he tried to fire stingers from his rear at the truck's tires. It was not a good look.
"Where are they headed?" asked Ms. O. "If he stays on 440, he'll hit Staten Island, but he's a psycho with a weather machine, so I wouldn't assume anything," Teresa said coolly. "Rabbi Diamond and the Big Axe are on an attack ship headed down to meet him if Golden Jacket sweeps him into Brooklyn."
Sweeping was the term used in the industry for moving a supervillain into another company's territory so that they became someone else's problem. There was a friendly understanding that this was dishonest and should never happen, and thus everyone tried really hard not to look like they were doing it. Ms. O pointed at the screen.
"If he gets into Brooklyn, capture the truck. I really like that machine. Might be useful against the egg. Just tell everyone to be extra careful."
On the screen, Andrea saw the truck cross the outer bridge crossing from Jersey into Staten Island. The drone closed in to show a young man behind the wheel in a tuxedo, a handlebar mustache, and a bowler sitting on top of an impressive afro. At least Doppler Destruction took pride in his appearance. They could not pick up any sound, but they saw him laugh uproariously at something. Perhaps it was a funny joke, or the radio, or maybe the hilarity of impending death. It was hard to guess with supervillains. Golden Jacket's chase seemed more and more half-hearted as Doppler Destruction sped north on 440, headed to I-278.
"If they turn him east, that'll sweep him right to us," Teresa noted,
and indeed, a few minutes later, hand grenades stood by the ramp to I-278 West, dressed in her usual desert camo uniform, and firing her hands at Doppler Destruction, which exploded close enough to force him to take the eastbound ramp. Hand grenades' hands regrew, and she fired them again at the truck, but from a safe distance with no chance of damaging it.
"How come whenever I drive through Staten Island, traffic is more backed up than the winner of a cheese-eating contest?" Ms. O asked. "They're flying right along."
"Superbia cleared the roads," Teresa informed her.
"Great. Now clear one more damn truck."
Teresa leaned into the mic to address the troops.
"Remember that he is not in our territory until he gets to Brooklyn. I do not need to explain the liability issues if we attack too soon."
More than one New York City mayor and countless city council members had suggested that the city move to one company to protect all five boroughs. But state law mandated that individual counties had the right to dispense funds as they saw fit. Each borough being a county, the borough presidents had fought to keep the autonomy to choose their own superhero corp. Because of the highly connected nature of New York City, there were a few thorny issues concerning bridges, tunnels, and subways. A few years earlier, when Mega Defense briefly held the Queens contract, King Tiger fought Mole E. Kuehl on the G train. He had been told to disengage when the train passed from Brooklyn into Queens. King Tiger was a true believer, however, and he continued to fight, eventually defeating and capturing the villain. Cop had to pay an obscene amount of money to pay for the damage done to the train car and the track, as they were operating outside their territory. The bridges and tunnels were even more confusing because the boroughs themselves argued over the exact borders. Superbia had pushed hard for Staten Island's territory to include the Verrazano up to the point it crossed over land into Brooklyn in order to use images of the bridge in their promotional materials. Running through all of that in her mind, Andrea wanted to give herself a pat on the back for how well she had absorbed the rules and regulations of superheroing. In her mind, she contrasted this to her other recent jobs, where she could never remember if flip-flops were permissible footwear. She also knew all of the vendors for Cup's cafeteria and snack machines, but that knowledge was not relevant now. Andrea looked at a monitor displaying an attack ship, an orange and blue hover jet loaded with heavy machine guns and rocket launchers which also served to carry Cup soups into battle. Rabbi Diamond and the Big Axe hopped out of the ship right where the Verrazano Bridge crossed just above the outer shores of Brooklyn. A few moments later, King Tiger, Kitchen Sink, Permafrost, and Senora Fuego sprang out of a Cup van to meet them. The group quickly huddled, and King Tiger laid out the strategy.
"Permafrost, I will need you to ice the roadway. Rabbi, I will need you to control the van once it gets in your range. Sink, I need you on our left flank, in case we need a plan B. Fuego and the Big Axe, right flank."
The truck continued to barrel down the highway with Golden Jacket keeping a safe distance. Even further behind, hand grenades drove her Jeep at a disinterested speed, with no interest shown in fighting crime.
"If Doppler Destruction gets a flat tire, are they going to help him change it or just give him a lift into our territory?" Mizzo asked no one in particular.
As Doppler destruction zoomed onto the Verrazano Bridge, Cup's superheroes positioned themselves for battle.
We left Lightning Wong out of this one. We thought it might be a mess if we struck a weather machine with lightning, Teresa explained.
Probably a wise move.